When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Dirsch Show. Before I get to the saga of Nathan Wade and Fannie Willis, as you know, Nostradamus Dershowitz predicted it perfectly. I said that the judge would try to split the baby in half. The baby died. I predicted that he would disqualify Wade, but not disqualify Willis. And that he would find that there was an appearance of conflict, but not a real conflict. I got it exactly right. CNN again, got it exactly wrong. I get it right, not because I'm smarter, but because I don't allow my own preferences. My own preference would have been, of course, for the judge to completely disqualify Wade and to recommend her criminal investigation, prosecution, and imprisonment. So that was not my goal. My wish was not to see this divided opinion, but my analysis was that, and that's why I get my predictions right, and CNN always gets them wrong. But before we get there, I don't know if I'm going to make a prediction here, but I want to talk about this absolute scandal that's occurring now in New York. Trump spurned by 30 companies as he seeks bond in $454 million judgment. So a little bit of background. Case brought by Letitia James, who said she ran on a campaign of getting Trump, my book, that's the title of the book, Get Trump, based on Letitia James. And so she proves beyond any doubt, she proves that nobody lost any money. Nobody was hurt. Usually it's no harm, no foul, but not this judge. He figured out a way of creating such an enormous fine that even Donald Trump couldn't get a bond to pay it. And so if he doesn't get a bond and the court doesn't give him some relief, he will not be able to appeal his judgment. Let's consider the implications of that for a minute. You get a rogue judge who knows that his opinion is going to be reversed. There's no doubt his opinion is going to be reversed. Let's assume he does it on complete racial grounds or grounds that the person was a Jew and therefore he should pay $500 million. And then the person who has lost the case, the fine is so great that he can't get the bond and he can't appeal it. So the judge has insulated himself from an appeal by making the judgment so large that nobody could get a bond. Can you imagine a greater denial of due process and equal protection and fundamental fairness than a judge invoking a fine deliberately to avoid the possibility that he'll be reversed on appeal? That's what happened here. And I hope the appellate courts will see through this and will say, look, Judge, you just can't do that. He has the right to appeal. And this bond provision is unconstitutional if it denies him the right to appeal. In a criminal case, obviously, nothing like this could happen. But in a civil case, a case that is very punitive, because remember, there was no damage here. So the fine is a punitive fine. I believe a fine covered by the Eighth Amendment, which says that cruel and unusual punishment is unconstitutional. This is a cruel and unusual punishment. It's not cruel in the sense that torture is cruel, but it's surely unusual. You know, almost half a billion dollar fine for doing something that hurts no one. It's not even arguably fraud or anything like that. If it was a criminal case, there couldn't be a fine like that. But because it's a civil case, it can't. But no judge should be able to insulate himself from appeal by making the bond so high that nobody could raise it. The New York court should hold that Trump has made a good faith effort. He can probably put up a bond of $100 million. That's more than enough because the court is obviously going to reduce the fine. It can't allow a fine of that amount to go forward. And if this court doesn't do it, the New York Court of Appeals will do it. And if that court doesn't do it, arguably the Supreme Court may do it. You just can't allow this kind of out of control injustice by this judge to prevent this defendant from going on with an appeal. So I hope Trump's lawyers are smart enough to make these constitutional arguments. I'm not his lawyer, but you know, you guys are entitled to borrow my arguments. Both sides are entitled to borrow my arguments. But these days, my arguments tend to be on Trump's side because he is the one who's being subject to this get Trump unconstitutionality, this weaponization of the justice system against one individual. As he said the other day, and he was 100% right, didn't get me to vote for him, but he's 100% right when he says if he were not running for president and were not the leading candidate now, none of these cases would have been brought. You don't bring cases against a real estate dealer based on this kind of alleged misevaluation of property when banks can do their own evaluations. Again, no harm, no foul. So I hope the courts will see through this trick by the judge in this case, this trick of imposing a fine so high that you can't raise the bail to allow you to appeal. If the judge had just said, look, I'm rendering this judgment and you're not allowed to appeal it, ha ha, obviously he'd be reversed, but that's what the judge has done. So let's move on to my two favorite district attorneys. Well, I got a few. I got Letitia James, I got Alvin Bragg, and of course, I have Fawny Willis. So as I said, I predicted exactly what the judge was going to do. It didn't take a genius to make that prediction. I think what the judge did is he started out with his conclusion. He said, look, I'm not going to disqualify Fawny Willis and her whole office. I'm running for office myself as a judge. I have to live. I'm only 30-something years old. I have to live in this county. I'm not going to disqualify her. But he's, you know, that's easy. You can disqualify him. It doesn't matter. He really had no input into the case. The guy's a lawyer, small-time lawyer in small-time cases. Probably didn't even know what the word RICO meant until he got appointed by his lover. So he made up his mind what he was going to do. And then he had to figure out a way of doing it. And he was really stuck because he, like everybody else, saw Fawny Willis lying through her teeth. And he saw Nathan Wade lying through his teeth. And he saw some of the witnesses. And he said, the American public is going to say, who do you trust, me or your lying eyes? So I have to find maybe that she isn't telling the whole truth. I have to give them something. But I'll figure out a way of basically calling her a liar and yet allowing her to stay on the case. So here's what he does. It's just bizarre. He says there is reason to believe that her testimony might be untruthful. Imagine a judge saying that about the district attorney. Reason to believe, a reasonable basis for believing that it might be untruthful. He also says there's an aura of mendacity. What does that mean? They're all liars. They're lying. So he's basically saying, I don't believe a word she says. Then how do you not find that she received a material benefit when we have records, American Express records, other credit card records that he paid for thousands and thousands of dollars of vacations for her? Well, the only way to respond to that is to say, well, maybe, as she says, she actually paid back every penny. Maybe she actually paid him back. So what does the judge do? He says, this liar, this woman about whom there's an aura of mendacity, this woman who there's a reasonable basis for believing she may be untruthful, I'm going to believe her. I'm going to believe her. I'm going to rely on her testimony. And that's what he does. He relies on her testimony that she paid him back. Now, let's think about that for a second. She's a lawyer and she's a district attorney and she understands the rules in Georgia. And the rules in Georgia are crystal clear. You cannot obtain a material benefit from anybody who works for you. No kickbacks. So if you're a lawyer and your lover, who you've just hired, given him $700,000, has rewarded you by taking you on trips, which he pays for. If you're a lawyer and you actually paid back the money, you actually paid the money back in cash, you would keep records. You would be able to prove that because she had to know what the law is. She has to demonstrate that she paid the money back. And she has to have known that someday she'll be called on it because it's her lover and he's working for her. You'd think if anybody actually paid the money to him, she'd keep multiple records of it. She'd have bank withdrawals. Oh, I don't need banks. I'm black. You don't understand. If you're black, you don't use banks. You keep the money in your house. It's a black thing. Nonsense. My grandmother from Poland kept money in the house, too, in case she had to run away from the Cossacks. It's just nonsense. So she says, I didn't have to have a withdrawal slip. And he didn't have to have a deposit slip. Nothing. No withdrawal slip, no deposit slip. No photograph. If I'm giving somebody cash, believe me, I'm taking a picture. Here's the money, Nathan. Photograph the money, spread it out on the table, and I'm giving it to you. Now, of course, he could have given it back, but at least there's some evidence. At the very least, since the day I started teaching at Harvard in 1964, I have this little book. It's called the Coop Book. I get it every single year. This is my Coop Book this year, a little worn. And every single transaction, everything I do all day is in this book. I keep records. I'm a lawyer. You'd think that if she paid back all this money, she'd at least keep a record in her diary. She'd at least make some notation. Today I paid back $12,000 in cash, which was in the bottom of my closet because black people keep money in the bottom of their closet. So I did that today. Something. What does she come up with? Basically, all she comes up with, the fact that she once paid for a wine tasting lunch or something like that and paid cash. Well, what does that prove? Even the judge was skeptical about that, but he said there's no basis for completely disbelieving her. Now, first of all, the burden of proof should have shifted to her. The judge got the standard all wrong. Here's the way it usually works. The defendant in the case, the people who are on trial, the people who are bringing this motion, have the burden of proving that he paid for her trips, right? Okay. That burden was easily satisfied. There are American Express records. But once they satisfy that burden, if she's going to claim she paid him back in cash, obviously she has the burden on that issue. The burden shifts from him, from them to her, once there's evidence beyond any doubt that he, Nathan Wade, had paid for the trips. So if she's going to claim she paid him back, she has the burden on that. Judge says, no. They have the burden on everything. So he slips out of this. Basically, he finds that she lied, which means perjury, by the way. It doesn't just mean a lie. If you lie under oath in a judicial proceeding, you go to jail for 5 years. It's perjury. The judge basically finds that she did lie, reason to doubt her credibility, lie about when the affair began. There's no doubt about that. The evidence is overwhelming. We have cell phone evidence. We have two witnesses. And we have their lack of credibility. Everybody watching that thing knows, everybody knows that their affair began before she said it began, that she committed perjury when she said it began only after he hired her. The judge weasels out of that too, kind of figures out a way of saying, well, no reason to believe her, no reason to disbelieve her. This is not a criminal case. We don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she committed perjury. That hopefully will come if and when prosecutors get on this case and look at a possible perjury, obstruction of justice, witness tampering, and conspiracy prosecution. But no, the judge says, maybe she had some problems. There's no maybe here. Of course she lied about that. Let me tell you this. I'm an experienced criminal lawyer. I've done hundreds of these cases. There are people on death row today in places like Texas. There have been people executed, including one a couple of weeks ago, on less evidence than that Fonnie Willis and Nathan Wade committed perjury. Less evidence. I have a client. I got his conviction reversed on appeal. Now he's in jail on a plea bargain, but he's in jail for murder based on cell phone records, based on the fact that there were pings in areas around where the alleged crime occurred. And the evidence there was much weaker and much more circumstantial. And yet it was enough to convict him at the first trial and enough to make him accept a plea at the second trial. There are many, many people in jail based on pings. There are many, many people in jail based on claims. I paid her back with cash. No, Your Honor, I remember a case some years ago when I was a very young lawyer and I was pretty poor, very low salary by those standards in those days. And a client came to me and he said, I need you to represent me. Interesting case. It was a RICO case. I said, all right, but here's my fee. I think it was, I don't remember, $15,000 back in the day, long time ago. And he said, sure, I'll bring it to you tomorrow. And the next day comes and he comes with a pizza box filled with $20 bills. And I said, I don't take cash. Go to the bank and get a bank check. And the guy says, we don't do banks. I thought he would say next, we only hold them up. We don't really deal with them. We don't do banks. I said, I don't do cash. But if I did do the cash, because obviously I want to pay tax on every penny that I earn. If I did do cash, the first thing I do is, you know, take out my camera, photograph the cash, put it in a file, indicate how much it was, and then pay my taxes on it. That's what lawyers do. That's what good lawyers do. That's what honest lawyers do. They either don't take cash, or if they do take cash, they go to the bank and they fill out a form. There's a form you fill out if you deposit cash. That's the way to do it. There's just no way, no way that this woman merely had an apparent conflict of interest. She had a legitimate, real, direct conflict of interest. Now, the judge made an interesting finding. He said, again, CNN said the exact opposite. CNN's people assured their listeners, you must, under Georgia law, find an actual conflict, not the appearance of a conflict. Well, the judge looked at all the cases and said, no, that's not true. I can disqualify her if I find an appearance of conflict of interest. And I do find an appearance of conflict of interest. You'd think the next sentence would be, and therefore I disqualify her. But he says, but I don't have to disqualify her under an appearance of a conflict of interest. I have the discretion to do it. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm not going to exercise my discretion to disqualify her. I'm going to give her a choice. You have this great choice. Either you can be disqualified or you can fire your former lover, Nathan Wade. What did the judge think she would do? The whole office would be disqualified. So, of course, she cans Nathan Wade. He's now out, made his $750,000. Not a bad take for not even trying the case. The big loser in that, of course, is Donald Trump. He would have been much better off if Nathan Wade tried the case. Maybe they'll get a real lawyer now to try the case instead of somebody who was picked because of his sexual relationship with the prosecutor. But this case just is a scandal, and I hope it's not over. Now, I don't know the technicalities of Georgia law. Every state is different as to whether a decision not to disqualify a district attorney is immediately appealable. It is in some jurisdictions. And if it is in Georgia, they ought to appeal that immediately. It's called either a writ of mandamus or a collateral appeal. But there's mechanisms by which you can sometimes appeal what is a final judgment within a case. This is a final judgment within a case. The final judgment is she stays, she's not disqualified. That's pretty darn final. Or the final judgment is he's disqualified. That's pretty darn final. So there's that option. The judge mentions other options as well. Well, you can report it to this committee, that committee, to the bar. Well, I hope the Trump lawyers will do that. And maybe the bar will have the cojones that he didn't have and say, look, as a matter of legal ethics, you can't continue to prosecute a case when you've received payments in the form of travel and when the case may have been influenced by giving him work to do that filled his pockets, from which he took some money and gave it to you in the form of tickets for vacation. So it's possible that the Bar Association or the Senate committee or somebody else will look into it. Final word on this. If this case goes forward with Fani Willis having any role to play, it will be a scandal, a disgrace, an abomination to the law. This is one of the clearest cases I've ever seen of disqualifiable conduct. And believe me, I've seen plenty of them, but none as bad as this one. If this one goes forward, Trump and his co-defendants will have a very good appellate issue if they lose the case. But of course, if they appeal and win, it will probably be after the election. The goal of the prosecutors all along has been to get a down and dirty conviction in all four of the cases, knowing that some of them will be reversed on appeal in an effort to influence the election. I don't want to see criminal cases, civil cases, influence an election. Let the election be determined on issues like the economy, immigration, the Middle East war, Ukraine. Those are the issues the American public cares about. And it shouldn't depend on whether or not Donald Trump waved a piece of paper that he said was classified in front of a journalist, or whether Biden waved a piece of paper and gave it to his ghostwriter. Those cases should not be brought in the middle of a political campaign for the presidency. So that's my view. What's yours? Write me about it. And speaking of writing me about it, here's what's been written to me about it since last week. People who say they favor diversity and inclusion are the first to censor out and exclude any different ideas and opinions. I could not agree more. The DEI bureaucracy is instrumental in censorship. Part of their role is to make sure that other points of view can't be expressed, and they punish them with microaggressions, or they require people to take loyalty oaths. Oh, I will support DEI as if it's a god. My goal, get rid of DEI in every institution in America and substitute real diversity, intellectual diversity, idea diversity, economic diversity, political diversity, substitute equality for equity and have real inclusion. Let everybody be included. Let the motto be meritocracy. Meritocracy. If you deserve it, you'll get it based on your individual work ethic. Martin Luther King, judge me by the content of my character, not the color of my skin or my religion or my ethnicity. Okay. I am a lifetime Republican that agrees with your position on these matters. I miss the days when reasonable people on both sides of the aisle can have a meeting of the minds. Look, I miss those days too. I don't know where they are. They certainly aren't in major universities today. In major universities, dissenting views on many of them are not respected, and on some, not permitted. Thank you for offering to help the Gold Star family members. It's a disgrace for them to have been arrested. They haven't called me yet. I'm hoping the lawyers will. I would be happy to help out. I have a theory. I have an idea. I have a constitutional analysis that I think could help them. I think it's a shame that a man who lost his son as the result of what appears to be American negligence and how the withdrawal was conducted, he certainly has the right to ask the American public to recognize his son's tragic death and what his son did for the country. God forbid, if it were me, I think I'd want to shout out my son's name and take my hat off to him and, you know, put my hand up in salute. I hope they'll drop the charges. I think they'll drop the charges. But if they don't, and his lawyers want my help, I'm there pro bono. Okay. How does Congress have immunity but not the president? It's a very interesting story. You could make the argument. Congress must have immunity because it's in the Constitution. Presidential immunity is not in the Constitution, but then how do you explain judicial immunity? Judges, the ones who tell us whether we have immunity or not, the ones who make the law, not supposed to, but they do make the law. The Supreme Court has held that judges have judicial immunity. It's not in the Constitution. So you can have judicial immunity if it's essential to performing your role, even if it's not in the Constitution. And immunity is pretty essential to performing the role of a president, more so than judicial immunity. But of course, judges are going to give themselves judicial immunity because they're the ones making the decision and they're the ones benefiting from the decision. Okay. Oh, this is nice. This is just nice. It must have been amazing to be a student of this incredible man. I am a high school graduate and I love listening to this man. Well, I love teaching young students. You know, I teach now, the only teaching I do now is I teach a course to young Chinese students. I do it by Zoom, obviously. But these are students who want to get into great universities in America. And so once a week, I teach them an introduction to American law. And it's really nice. They have open minds. They're willing to criticize the Chinese government in China. Some of them or not in China, but most of them are in China. That really takes courage. It's like voting against Putin in the last election. By the way, he won the election. Amazing. He won the election. And I think there were actually a few people who voted against him. I don't know if they're still around, but there are a few people who voted against him. But the vast majority of people voted for him. New York Times has a story saying probably he has widespread support by a lot of people, but we'll never know. Because obviously we know what happens to people who don't support. Wow, Dersh 25, 30 years ago was such a lefty. I was never a lefty. I was always a liberal. Never really liked the left. I was always a liberal. It's a tribute to him. He hasn't changed at all. Everyone moved further left and he stood right where he always was. Mad respect. No, he's right about that. I haven't changed a bit. I'm boringly consistent. I am the hobgoblin of small minds, in the words of Ralph Waldo Emerson. I've had these views since I'm 15 years old. Civil liberties views, anti-death penalty views, racial equality views, all the views are the same. When I was growing up, there isn't anybody who would have wanted racial quotas. Are you kidding? That's exactly what we fought against. But today, the left, DEI, racial quotas, more blacks. If there aren't enough blacks, that's the end of democracy. That's not what diversity is all about. I vote Republican, but listen to Dershowitz. That's good. That's good that you listen. You can disagree. And, I'm not thrilled these days with President Biden. I don't like his attitude toward Israel, for example. I don't like the fact that Schumer and Biden and Adam Schiff essentially all got together and said in different ways, we want Israel to elect a different prime minister. No, that's not in a democracy. They get to vote for that, not you. And you don't get to dictate to an ally in a democracy who should be the prime minister, whatever your views are. You want to talk to them privately? Okay, you have the right to do that. And Biden talked to Netanyahu privately today. And that's the way it should be. When you're an ally, you don't dictate. You don't dictate. You don't condition. You don't quid pro quo. And that's what's been going on. A lot of quid pro quoing claims by people like Senator Sanders. Again, you want to get me to vote for Trump? Just nominate Sanders for president. You got me. Sanders basically says we should cut off all aid to Israel unless Israel listens to us. No, that's not what allies do. Ukraine isn't perfect. You know, they have Nazis and part of their military. But they have the right to defend themselves, and Israel has the right to defend itself. And Biden was right when he said if Putin gets a victory in Yugoslavia, he's moving on to Lithuania. But the same thing is true of Hamas. If it gets a victory in Gaza, it's moving on to Europe, and it's coming to a theater near you. We'll talk more about these and other issues tomorrow. See you then.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.